helping to secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. This is the Constitution Study on the America Out Loud Network with your host, Paul Engel. When we pledge allegiance to the flag, we end with the line, with liberty and justice for all. But do we have liberty and justice for all? I'm not talking about singular examples of injustices, but at a systemic, at a societal level. When dealing with the U.S. Department of Justice, do we have the equal protection of the law? When someone goes to court, is justice blind or is she peeking to decide who deserves so-called justice in the case? When people blatantly slander and defame another, are we equally held to account? A quick look at the news, and I think the answer is obviously no. So if there is a two-tiered justice, quote-unquote justice system, if there truly are two Americas, then what are the American people to do? For our future will not ultimately be decided in the halls of Washington, D.C., but by how the people on Main Street react to what happens there. Hello there, everyday Americans. Paul Engel here with the Constitution Study. This is where we read and study the Constitution. We teach the rising generation to be free. We are returning the Constitution to its rightful owners, we, the people of the United States. And I am so glad you could join me today as we take a look at this idea of liberty and justice and ask, is it for all? Or am I looking for liberty and justice for me, but not for thee? Well, let's start out with a definition of what justice is. Not the social justice, ethnic justice, racial justice, economic, not all the adjective justice. What is justice? I go back to Webster's 1828 dictionary. Justice is the virtue which consists in giving to everyone what is his due. The idea of practical conformity to the laws and of the principles of the rectitude in the dealings of men with each other. Justice is making sure everyone gets treated the same. They get what is their due, whether it's their right or an opinion or an outcome that conforms with what is right, what is equitable, what is just, as we would use the term. And if there's one thing that has been under attack in this country for the last decade, maybe more, it has been justice. Now, we've always had periods of injustice, right? Of course, we had slavery, we had Jim Crow. There's been a lot of injustice in this country. And what was amazing, to my mind's eye, is how as we were fixing one form of injustice, another form of injustice has come up. Let's start off with probably what's been in the news a lot lately, and that is yet another indictment against Donald Trump. And this one simply, to my mind, reeks of desperation. This indictment has to deal with events around the January 6th and the results of the 2020 election. There are four federal charges arising based on the Jack Smith, the special counsel Jack Smith. One is conspiracy to defraud the United States. That's interesting. We have conspiracy to obstruct an official proceeding. Also interesting. An obstruction of an attempt to obstruct an official proceeding. Okay. And conspiracy to deprive citizens of the free exercise of constitutional rights. That sounds really bad. A lot of stuff going in here. Sounds like, oh man, this is really, well, I want to take a look at a bit closer at this indictment and the charges that it alleges. Now, part of the indictment is, we read, the purpose of the conspiracy was to overturn the legitimate results of the 2020 presidential election by using knowingly false claims of election fraud. Okay, so now we're criminalizing speech. They're saying that because that people, and again, I'm among them that believe there was fraud during the 2020 election. There is video evidence. There is even evidence, even in the last month or so, we are finding ballot issues during the election. And the speak of that is now considered conspiracy to overturn. How do we know the results are legitimate if there are accusations, credible accusations of fraud? Then we don't know that the outcome was legitimate. They say it's legitimate because, well, their guy won. But think about it. For 4 years, we had people claiming that the Trump was not the legitimate president. Were they not attempting to overturn the legitimate results of the 2016 election? They weren't charged with conspiracy to overturn the election. They weren't charged interfering with a government action. Now, even the indictment, the prosecutor, I'm sure Mr. Smith acknowledges that, hey, guess what? Mr. Trump has a right to speak freely. It's protected by the First Amendment against federal charges. But he says that he was entitled to formally challenge the election results. But the problem, according to Mr. Smith, is that they allege Trump pursued unlawful means of discounting legitimate votes and subverting the election results. All right, we need to roll back one very important thing here. It's something terribly misunderstood by the American people. The American people don't vote for president. They vote for electors. The states appoint those electors, and they're the ones that vote for president. So when the president, again, they're assuming illegal means. The only one I've heard of was his discussion with the governor of Georgia about, there was allegations of fraudulent votes. And he said, hey, go find those. If there are allegations, go find them. If they're there, let's find them. Of course, that's been reworded and reinterpreted, but that's not my focus here, is not to relitigate the 2020 elections. They claim apparently it was fraud to attempt to obstruct and defeat the lawful federal government function by which the results of presidential election are collected, counted, and certified by the federal government. Well, problem number two, yes, the federal government does collect and count them. The federal government does not certify the presidential election. They count them, period, end of story. That's all they can do. That, again, has been lost to the annals of time because people don't read the Constitution. They also claim that Mr. Trump knowingly and falsely claimed that the election was fraud, that his claims of fraud in the election he knew were false, but he spoke about them anyway. How are you going to prove that? Because as I read this, they claim that, well, see, people told him that there was that it wasn't fraudulent. But they keep missing the fact that he said, no, it was fraudulent. The fact that people told him they thought it was fair doesn't mean that he believed it was fair. So how do you know that he falsely did it if he actually believed this was true? They also claim that Mr. Trump attempted to use the Justice Department to make knowingly false claims of election fraud to officials in targeted states through a formal letter under the acting attorney general's signature, thus giving the defendant lies the backing of the federal government attempting to improperly influence the targeted states to replace legitimate Biden electors with the defendants. Okay, first of all, you complain that he's created his own slate of electors. That's another part that's in here. But again, knowingly false? I've already pointed to at least four or five states that fraudulently appointed electors. That was some of the claims he was making. But is claiming something, is expressing an opinion about something, is that suddenly now fraudulent? Is that suddenly the standard? Are you no longer allowed to question the legitimacy of elections? Because we certainly were in 2016. In fact, of all the accusations, which again, based on a lot of assumptions that I don't think are true, the only one that seems to have any legal standing at all was that Trump attempted to enlist Vice President Biden to fraudulently alter the election results at the January 6th certification proceedings. First of all, they are not certification proceedings, ladies and gentlemen. They are the counting of the ballots. The federal government does not oversee the election of the president. It does not. I know we've been told that. I know we've been taught. It is a lie. Just read the Constitution. The only thing that happens is the vice president, as president of the Senate, opens the certificates from the states, and make sure they're counted in front of Congress, who are witnesses. Period, end of story. But they're right. Trump did try to get Vice President Pence to commit fraud, because the Vice President has no authority to accept or reject certificates from the states. Period. He doesn't. Congress doesn't have the legal authority to do so. I know there's federal law, but the Constitution doesn't give them that authority. It is the states that choose the president, and the states get to decide how to appoint electors. And if the states violate their own laws in doing so, that is a state issue. But there's more to this story. Why is it that there seems to be new charges against Trump pretty much every time something bad happens in the Hunter Biden case? Or when there's more evidence of bribery by the Biden family, including Joe? Why was the Trump residence raided for the documents he took into his possession while president, but yet we don't have any of that stuff about Biden when he had more documents spread over a larger area from times not only when he was vice president, where he had no authority to declassify documents, to the time when he was a senator? Justice for me, but not for thee? And truly, is it a crime to ask somebody to do something you think they legally can do, even though it's not actually legal? That's probably the closest they have to an actual case. He asked Pence, and then he derided him severely for not committing fraud, to do something he's not authorized to do under the Constitution. Then again, if we criminalize the president for every time he asks somebody in his administration to do something they're not legally authorized to do, we'd have criminal cases against every president in my entire lifetime. Now, I don't believe President Trump is above the law, and I believe that he was wrong to ask Pence to manipulate the election, the election results, but compare how he's being treated to how, say, Dr. Fauci's being treated. You may have heard that recently Senator Rand Paul made a criminal referral to the Department of Justice for Dr. Fauci for lying to Congress. He was interviewed on Fox News, on their Fox and Friends program, and it went something like this.
And so what happens now? Because he said in front of you, he said, no, there's no gain of function research. It might be semantics. His definition of gain of function might be different than yours, and you can go into that. And now this email is resurfacing.
You know, there's probably never been a government official caught more red-handed in a lie than this, because now he has proved the lie in his own words. So at first he kind of acted like, oh, we don't have anything to do with the research over there. We don't fund the research in Wuhan. So we found the actual scientific papers, and we found the grant number proving that it came from his agency. And then he said, oh, well, yeah, we're funding it, but it's not gain of function. My experts up and down have looked at this, and it's not gain of function. But now we have contemporaneous documents from February 2020, in the height of the beginning of the pandemic, where he's saying privately, well, yes, we're suspicious that this virus could have come from the lab because they're doing gain of function research. And he describes the project that I had described to him a year later, which he said, oh, there's nothing to see here. This is not gain of function.
Okay, so we have evidence that Dr. Fauci lied to Congress. Heck, if everybody in Congress who lied before Congress was actually held to the same account, maybe there'd be something there. But the point that wasn't made is, I believe the funding of gain of function was a violation of federal law, that the NIH was not authorized by Congress to spend money on gain of function. Right. So there's that crime. But even Dr. Fauci admitting that we were worried this sustained gain of function. And, again, this is Rand Paul. There's a political bent to this. I agree. But Rand Paul said something else that I think is very important to today's discussion.
The problem is this. We have Merrick Garland, who I think is a pure rank partisan. I don't think he'll ever be prosecuted. But we also have a Democrat Party that is happy to have paid him more than the president, more than any president ever makes, and that he actually got $1 million from a private foundation while he was still a public servant. Everything about this is rotten to the core. And if we don't bring him to justice, we'll never get the controls we need on this type of research.
So again, problem number one, Anthony Fauci, the Department of Justice, do you think they're going to investigate Dr. Fauci with a fraction of the effort, the time and money and expense they've put in to President Trump? For finding, and again, so far, the indictments have been pure garbage. They've been partisan garbage. I've yet to see one that had that really stood up to anything, but maybe they find something. But again, if it's not something, it's not simply the DOJ. As Mr. Paul points out, we have a Democratic Party that's more than willing to fund this type of research, to fund. He was talking about the salary given to Dr. Fauci. To me, that's a whole separate issue. But the idea is, if we have, if the American people, through Fauci and his organization, funded gain-of-function research, which led to COVID-19, and we do not hold them accountable, no, this we'll never get control. We'll never have control of our money if the people who fraudulently spend it are not held accountable. Now, I have to take a break before I go, that there are a couple places I'd love you for you to check out. The first is Fox's Fired Up Flags. That's facebook.com/FoxFiredUpFlags. They created a flag for me. It's absolutely beautiful. Everybody who's talked to me about it has commented on just how gorgeous this is. And you can find out more. They do furniture. They do all sorts of pieces, hand-carved right here in the USA. Just go to facebook.com/FoxFiredUpFlags and find out more. Now, also, probably, you know, we're talking about COVID and its aftermath. One of the ways I dealt with COVID was making sure I had a strong immune system. And you can support your immune system, whether you're at home or while you're on the go, with Healthy Cells immune boosting nutrients that come in a simple travel-ready gel pack. Immune Super Boost combines over a dozen immune supplements, and they're easy to use and they're easy to travel with. Now, since you're an America Out Loud listener, you can get 25% off your first order if you use the code Out Loud at checkout. Just go to AmericaOutLoud.shop, find the Healthy Cell card, click on it. It has all the information you need. Basically, go follow the link, go to Healthy Cell, check out all their great products. I'm talking about Immune Super Boost, but they've got a lot of great products. But use that code Out Loud at checkout. It lets them know that you listen to America Out Loud. And as a thank you, you'll get 25% off your first order.
World-class care from doctors you can trust, all from the comfort of your home. That is One Wellness. Dr. Peter McCullough and his team at The Wellness Company launched the One Wellness membership to provide free monthly supplements and unlimited telemedicine access with doctors that share your values. The Wellness Company's chief medical board designed every supplement and medical protocol with your health in mind. From groundbreaking supplements like the Spike Support Formula to unique care like Freedom from Big Pharma. Join a healthcare system that puts your health and well-being above the interest of Big Pharma's bottom line. It's the way healthcare should be, with a company that shares your values. Go to OutLoudCare.com today and use code OUTLOUD for 25% off your first month of One Wellness.
Trouble getting to sleep and staying asleep is infuriating. Your mind races, you toss and turn, and the harder you try, the harder it is to drift off. And today's fast-paced digital age makes it tougher. You're not alone. Poor sleep affects over 70% of us. The CDC even labeled insufficient sleep a public health epidemic. Advanced Nutrition Company, Healthy Cell, created REM Sleep to help you quickly fall asleep, stay asleep, sleep deep, and wake refreshed. Unlike other supplements that don't work, REM Sleep is not a pill. It's a gel you swallow with ultra-absorption of science-backed ingredients, supporting all four stages of sleep using calming herbs, amino acids, and sleep hormone support. Over 1,000 reviews with an average star rating of over 4.4 proves it works. Take back your sleep. Go to HealthyCell.com and use limited time code OUTLOUD for 25% off your first order, risk-free. Love it or your money back. Guaranteed. HealthyCell.com, code OUTLOUD. HealthyCell.com, code OUTLOUD.
Oral hygiene hasn't changed in 50 years, but our diet and the way we eat has, creating an environment in your mouth for bacteria to wreak havoc on your teeth and gums. For better oral health, get Spry Dental Defense, an oral care line designed to combat acid-creating bacteria. The toothpaste, mouthwash, mints, and gum all contain xylitol, a natural ingredient shown to dramatically improve oral health. Spry can be found online and at all fine natural retailers.
Welcome back, Everyday Americans. You rejoin the Constitution Study. Today, we're looking at liberty and justice for me, but not for thee. I'm so glad you could join me today. You know, I spent the first segment talking about the recent Trump indictments, and I want to look at more than just the government when it deals with justice, because, you know, we talk about it so often. We think about government infringing on justice, but what about the justice we owe our neighbors and others? What about this idea of liberty, allowing others to live as they see fit? Take, for example, you know, there have been a lot of attacks recently on Elon Musk. People don't like Elon Musk for taking over Twitter and what he's been doing with it. Okay. Well, there's a group called the Center for Countering Digital Hate. This, to me, seems like another example of the purpose being the exact opposite of the title. But their CEO, Amran Ahmed, they've been having some issues with Mr. Musk. Let's say Mr. Musk has finally had enough. See, he, through his attorneys, he sent a letter to the CCDH, the Center for Countering Digital Hate. He slammed them as in their research against this new platform, Twitter, now known as X. See, Musk argued that the CCDH is falsely accusing X of allowing so-called hate speech on its platforms. The letter, at least as reported in the New York Times, called the research false, misleading, or both. Similarly, on a blog post back on July 31st, X blasted the CCDH for actively working to assert false and misleading claims, encouraging advertisers to pause investment, prevent public dialogue, prevent free expression by targeting individuals it doesn't agree with. Oh, so here we have Twitter, again, known infamously for the Twitter files, for censoring people. Musk takes over. He shares some of this information. We have a group that says its purpose is to counter digital hate, and according to Musk, is making false and misleading claims. They're trying to get investors to shut down. And now, again, they have the right to express themselves. They have the right to encourage each other. The question becomes, when does it become defamation? In other words, it's one thing for them to say, listen, X is bad, but if you're going to lie about them to do them harm, I believe that's the definition of defamation. In fact, a quick look at the Free Legal Dictionary says defamation is any intentionally false communication, either written or spoken, that harms a person's reputation, decreases the respect, regard, or confidence in which a person is held, or introduces disparaging, hostile, or disagreeable opinions or feelings against a person. So Mr. Musk sends them a letter, says, hey, you're basically defaming me, you're doing it because you don't like what people are saying. You're truly attempting to, I allow free speech on my platform. What they're saying is not illegal, but you don't like it. You want it shut down. You label it hate speech, falsely label it hate speech, and then use that to harm me and my company's reputation. Well, let's just say Mr. Ahmed didn't really like that. He wrote an opinion article for MSNBC, the bastion of free speech, whining that Musk is bullying him. He said Musk is trying to silence the independent research at CCDH, who are shining a light on the situation. Is he bullying him? Or is it CCDH that's trying to bully X and Musk? Amit went on to say that his group's research that hate speech is on the rise in X. He said Musk and his legal team have engaged in an aggressive campaign to intimidate, bully, and silence CCDH. Mr. Amit, isn't that exactly what you're trying to do to X, to those on X who disagree with you? To bully, intimidate, using aggressive campaigns of misinformation? Well, what I think is misinformation, you may think it's legal. The question is it true? Now, understand, I actually like what's going on here. Because what you have is you have two people with differing points of view. You have Elon Musk, you have Amran Ahmed, and they are whacking each other. They're hitting each other over the head verbally. And I think this is the way we find the truth. What's interesting from my standpoint is Ahmed is trying to shut down X, formerly Twitter, and Elon Musk, where Elon Musk saying, hey, if your information is true, where's your evidence? If it's what you're saying is false and misleading, you're lying, you're defaming me. I want to see this go to court because I kind of want to see the discovery on both sides. I want to see the CCDH provide evidence that what they're saying is true. I want to see Twitter, now X, showing evidence that says, no, what you're saying is false. And I want to see the truth and I want to come out in the real world. The question is, will this ever happen? Do we have examples of, say, one political agenda being silenced while the other political agenda is lied about? Where would I find an example of a political actor lying about someone else, and rather than being chastised for it and repentant of it, they simply go on? Could it be Vice President Kamala Harris? I mean, she's been repeating this lie. She was actually at an event in Florida and repeated it again. We said, right here in Florida, they plan to teach students that enslaved people benefited from slavery. All right, is that really what is being taught in Florida? She went on to say, they insult us in an attempt to gaslight us, in an attempt to divide and distract our nation with unnecessary debates. And now they attempt to legitimize those unnecessary debates with a proposal that most recently came in of a politically motivated roundtable. Well, I'm here in Florida, and I will tell you there is no roundtable, no lecture, no invitation we will accept to debate on undeniable fact. There were no redeeming qualities of slavery. Now, remember, I believe it was Kamala Harris who also promoted the idea of the so-called Don't Say Gay bill, which never existed. There was no bill that said don't say gay. There was a bill that says you're not going to teach sexualization to children in first through third grades, but that's something else. But let's listen to the words of Dr. William B. Allen. He's the man who laid out the curriculum that Ms. Harris is so antagonistic to.
There's been a little bit of backlash to these standards that, you know, were put out. And, you know, like you said, that, you know, these were done in open sessions so the public could, you know, listen or watch along. You know, what would you say to critics who say these standards have set education back?
Well, I can't answer critics whom I haven't seen or heard. The only criticism I've encountered so far is a single one that was articulated by the vice president, and which was an error. As I stated in my response to the vice president, it was categorically false. It was never said that slavery was beneficial to Africans. What was said, and anyone who reads this will see this with clarity, it is the case that Africans proved resourceful, resilient, and adaptive, and were able to develop skills and aptitudes which served to their benefit, both while enslaved and after enslavement.
So what we have here is Harris saying it says one thing. We have the person who wrote it, who, by the way, this was done in open, in public, and he says, I have evidence. If you read it, it doesn't say that slavery was beneficial. It said Black people were very resilient. They found a way to learn and then to use those skills both while they were enslaved and after they were enslaved. But notice something else. See, Ms. Harris refuses to consider the possibility of talking with somebody else. She says, well, I'm here in Florida, and I will tell you there is no roundtable, no lecture, no invitation. We will accept to debate an undeniable fact. The undeniable fact that is contradicted by apparently facts and evidence. Again, if you go and read the standards, but this, Ms. Harris is showing the what I refer to as the Dietrich Bonhoeffer version of stupidity. I have my facts. They are undeniable because I believe them. Therefore, they will broach no argument. Now, where's the liberty in justice? Where's the liberty to say, okay, you say one thing, I say something else. Let's have an open discussion and see whose facts have evidence to prove it. None. Tell me, are the people who developed this curriculum, are they going to sue Ms. Harris for defamation, for lying, knowing that either she willfully or stupidly is lying about this curriculum? If she has proof, prove it. Provide your facts and data. But then again, it would be tried in federal court with the Justice Department. Do you really expect that we would get a fair hearing in such a situation? Now, there's some other interesting ways I want you to consider that this lack of justice, because justice is not simply, again, courts and laws and rules. How about the justice of federal actions? You may have heard that recently the U.S. credit rating has been downgraded from AAA to AA+. Now, that sounds like a little thing, but it's not. To me, it's the downgrading of the U.S. debt is the financial world's looking at us and saying, you guys are nuts. You're borrowing money you can never pay off, and you're using it, by the way, I should say, it's being used to bribe the American people with things the federal government's not allowed to do. So first of all, where's the justice of borrowing money that our children will have to pay off for programs that benefit us? There isn't any. But you see, children don't vote. Even adults don't vote generally until they're older. And if they're the ones getting the benefits, how about the ones that are getting other illegal federal programs, student loan debts, welfare, education programs, all these illegal, all these fraudulent, all these in violation of the Constitution? But we're told, nope, we're going to borrow this money because we can't afford it. And honestly, we'll pay it off later. Nobody believes that. Where's the justice for the succeeding generations of this ridiculous profligate spending? And again, as often as you want to go pointing your finger at Congress, remember, you hired them. You hired, whether you voted for that individual or not, you were part of the process of hiring the people that has spent America's credit rating now just to a slip, but our, you know, and the only reason it slipped is because people will still loan us money. How long before this snowballs and America's credit rating goes down the toilet? Where's the justice in that? Where's the liberty that our future generations will have when they're paying off trillions of dollars just in interest on the debt for something they did not benefit from? Where's the justice while the federal government is taking money they illegally loaned to students and now not require them to pay it back? Where? There isn't any. Justice in many cases has become a foreign term, as has liberty, with so much of our federal structure, so much of our federal government, and at our states as well. And again, we've gotten here because we've decided that our way is the right way, And in many cases, we have refused to allow others to live their life the way they see fit, to have unnecessary, to avoid all unnecessary external influence. See, we have no liberty because we have sold our soul to government. We've sold our future. We've sold our protection. We are dependent on government for everything from food to housing to protection, in some places even to water. And then we wonder why they claim they can be they claim they can't be prosecuted for their criminal activities while they attack those who disagree with them, whether that be a well-known name like President Trump or the lesser-known names of all the January 6th people who simply showed up for a demonstration, followed a crowd that was invited into the Capitol, performed no mayhem, did no damage, but yet are persecuted because they dared to question an election. An election where the swamp candidate won. Where's the justice for that swamp candidate's son getting a sweetheart deal, which is still not dead, contrary to some reporting, while people merely accused have been denied a speedy and public trial, and in some cases reported cruel and unusual treatment while incarcerated by Washington, D.C. And really, how is anybody who opposes the Democratic Party supposed to get a free, an impartial jury in Washington, D.C., when everybody there is dependent on that same federal behemoth that is attacking Mr. Trump and the January 6th group? Where is justice? Now, I have to take another break. Before I go, though, you know, there are a lot of people in America Aloud that have some really good news. By good, I mean different points of view, good details, good facts and evidence. And I don't know about you, but I check it every day to get news and information. And I wish you would, too. Go to AmericaOutloud.news. Then find those stories, the videos, the podcasts, the articles that really talk to you, that really express something, maybe something you'd never thought of before, and share it. See, that is the job. That is the work that helps us all secure the blessings of liberty.
How can you improve your odds of staying healthy? The answer is stay healthy with Cofix RX. Who's got time for a cold, strep, a flu, HRV, RSV, or COVID anyhow? Cofix has some great news. Besides being featured as a top 5 product in the drugstore news, we completed the protocol that you've heard Dr. McCullough talk about. Cofix RX is already famous for a powerful virus-hostile nasal solution, and now we have a throat spray too. Crush those nasty germs before they become a problem. With known antiviral support ingredients like povidone iodine, xylitol, and vitamin D3, you can feel a little safer. For a limited time, when you add the new Cofix RX throat spray to your order, you'll receive 25% off the entire purchase. Just click the Cofix RX banner on the America Out Loud website or store. Be sure to use promo code OUTLOUD25 at checkout. Don't forget, OUTLOUD25 at checkout.
Maintaining a strong immune system has never been more critical. Nutrition company Healthy Cell created Immune Super Boost to help you strengthen your immunity. Unlike other supplements that don't work, Immune Super Boost is not a pill. It's a gel you swallow with ultra absorption of science-backed nutrients proven to support immunity, like vitamin C, D3, zinc, elderberry, and echinacea. Go to HealthyCell.com and use limited time code OUTLOUD for 25% off your first order. Risk-free. Love it or your money back. Guaranteed. HealthyCell.com, code out loud.
With the rise of independent media, we are now AmericaOutloud.news. Well, the genius of the United States is not found in its executives or legislatures, nor its ambassadors, authors, colleges, or churches, nor even in its newspapers or inventors. The genius of the United States is we the people. AmericaOutloud.news. Liberty and justice for all.
Welcome back, Everyday Americans. You've rejoined the Constitution study, and today we've been talking about justice and how it's become one-sided. How, you know, certain people, you know, everything is you know, whatever you want, that's justice. But the countervailing ideas are derided, poo-pooed, and of course, facts and evidence are rarely required. And that this level of injustice that has impacts on everything from, again, the information you're allowed to have, whether or not the facts and data about the problems in the 2020 election, the dangers of the COVID vaccine, even the origins and severity of COVID-19. If we do not have liberty and justice for all, these competing ideas are not allowed to compete. And while some people are more than happy to shut down the other side, that's the fast track to tyranny. Because if you never check the other side, if the other side is simply dismissed, then how do you know what the truth is? You don't. You know what you're told, but that isn't necessarily true. So I keep referring back to an interview I heard with Neil deGrasse Tyson, a famous scientist, an astrophysicist, I believe. And during this interview, which, by the way, was about the vaccines, he kept referring to the scientific consensus. And I kept wanting to scream at my phone, what happens if the consensus is wrong? See, the whole idea is to, you challenge ideas. You let them bring their evidence, bring their proof, and let it get tested in the court of public opinion and in the court of people's minds and understanding, and then let them decide. Now, I want to take some time today and answer a couple of questions. A couple of questions come into the website. I'm always asking for questions. I appreciate people who ask questions. And by the way, I have a very simple theory about stupid questions. There are only two stupid questions in the world. The one you don't ask and the one you ask three times. If you don't know, ask. I don't, at least I try not to deride people for a lack of information. All I ask is that you listen to me, you check the facts that I provide, and then you make up your own mind. And if I haven't convinced you, that's okay. Of course, it doesn't necessarily mean that I'm wrong, but I'm going to keep going. You know, we need to find the facts and data. So again, I got two questions. Let's start with this one. Gentleman's name is Tony, and he's asking about the Electoral College. He says, I understand how the Electoral College is supposed to work, but most states no longer use the Electoral College as intended to elect presidents. Here in Illinois, most of the state is red except for a few areas, Chicago, Peoria, Champaign-Urbana, to name a few. Unfortunately, the number of votes in these areas control all state elections. We need to uncouple the Electoral College from the popular vote nationally. How could you do a show on this? Tony, I'd be happy to do. First, I get the impression from the way you ask your question that you don't actually understand how the Electoral College works. See, a lot of people claim that the Electoral College is there so that small states still have a say, and which is true, but we need to understand how it works. The first thing you need to understand is the states appoint electors for president in a manner decided by the state legislature. By the way, that's directly from Article 2, Section 1, Clause 2. Each state shall appoint, in such manner as the legislature thereof may direct, a number of electors equal to the whole number of senators and representatives to which the state may be entitled in the Congress. So the Electoral College, see, what you describe is the winner-take-all methodology of appointing electors. That has nothing to do with the first of all, even the term Electoral College is a bit of a myth. There is not an electoral college, college meaning a gathering. At best, we have 51 electoral colleges, one for each of the states, one for Washington, D.C., which is granted electors. That's a whole other subject. So the question is, how are these electors appointed? As you point out, in Illinois, it's a winner-take-all. So you have a few areas like Chicago, Peoria, and Champaign-Urbana that have a very large population, therefore they impact the vote the popular vote in that state. There is, by the way, there is no national popular vote, right? But the state has decided to appoint electors based on a winner take all of a statewide election. That is the decision of the legislature in Illinois. Now, is that the best way to do it? I don't think so. In fact, I would go even a step farther and say the whole process of appointing electors have been so corrupted at the state level that they need a giant overhaul. But let me focus on here in the Electoral College. The problem you have is Illinois said winner take all. Personally, I would like to see a state, and this is what I would like to see here in my own home state of Tennessee, is that each House district, an elector be chosen from each House district based on the popular election in that district. And then the two electors that represent the senators, right, because it's members of House and Senate, they are chosen by a statewide popular vote. So I don't know how many electors Illinois has off the top of my head, but let's say it's 30. And let's say, so you've got 28 House districts, you've got two senators. That would allow a more accurate distribution within the state to more accurately represent the population of the state as a whole, not just the highly populated areas. But that's a state issue, right? That's not, you know, that the way the Electoral College is supposed to work is the state gets to decide how to appoint these electors. And the state has decided. I just think it's not the best way of doing it in almost all of the states. You also talk about uncoupling the Electoral College from the popular vote nationally. There is no national popular vote. That is a myth created by the news media and certain political pundits in order to generate agita. Right? Nobody, not a single person in November votes for president. They vote for electors. Just check your ballot. Electors for, they're voting for people who have promised to vote for these positions. Do you know what I'd like to see? I'd like to see us go back to the actual process that our framers created for the Electoral College, meaning you vote for a neighbor. I think Tom or Jane or Sarah or Fred, I think they would be good electors. I think they would be the right people to help choose the president of the United States. And then they choose. Now, could you have a process where they pledged to vote for the candidate that represents a party? They could, but that puts the political parties in charge of the presidential election, not, you know, over the states. The states have basically given up control of the presidential electoral process to the parties in the method we go about doing it. By the way, that includes primaries, and that includes the way they assign presidential electors. So how do we fix it? Well, the answer is we start working within your state to change the manner of appointing electors. You do it in Illinois. I do it here in Tennessee. Again, my preferred method is one elector from each congressional district plus, based on a vote in that congressional district, plus two electors based on the statewide popular vote. That gets to be a balancing act of the opinion of the people in that state. So hopefully, Tony, that answers your question. I wanted to take some time to explain the Electoral College because it's something that's really confusing. I've talked about it recently. I did an article on the role of the president. You can find it at constitutionstudy.com, and I talk about it slightly there, and hopefully that's that's an answer. What do we do? It has to be done at the state level because the states are the ones that are appointing the electors. Now, the next question comes from Eric. Eric actually listens, to Pod Bless America. They've had me on their podcast several times. And he was listening to that. And he said, based on what Paul said on your last episode, if the state violates an opinion of the Supreme Court, one can file criminal and civil charges against the state. Is that true for opinions from state Supreme Courts? If that is true, can a citizen from Ohio file charges against the legislature for not coming up with a new way to fund public schools since the Ohio Supreme Court gave an opinion that property taxes were an unconstitutional way of funding the schools? That's actually a pretty good question, Eric. And again, this is based on something. If you want to find out more, just search for Pod Bless America. You can find that episode. What I was talking about is a specific situation. So Biden wanted to forgive student loans under a one-to-one program. The Supreme Court said, no, the Congress didn't give you the legal authority to do that. You can't do that. Trump claims to go ahead and do it anyway, either through that program or through other programs. And my point was, if you read Federalist Paper 78, the courts have neither force nor will, only judgment, according to Alexander Hamilton. They are dependent on the executive for the efficacy of their judgments. So they've issued a decision, but they're dependent on the president to actually put that in the case. What happens if the president simply ignores this opinion? And the point I made was, well, if the president simply ignores this opinion and he spends money contrary to the Constitution, is he not committing a federal crime? At which point the opinion of the court becomes evidence in either a criminal or a civil case. Right? So it was the question that was asked on the podcast was, well, if the president can ignore the decision of a court, what is the redress? Well, there's several of them, right? There was the Congress can simply defund it since they have to hold the power of the purse. Or people could sue and say, wait a second, you are violating, and here's evidence of the unconstitutional acts that you are committed, and could even go so far as to charge Mr. Biden criminally if they can show that either an actual crime was committed, as in embezzlement, which the fraudulent use of funds would be embezzlement. You could also have the question of, are they denying the people rights? But what is interesting is he then went on to say, what about a state Supreme Court? And that becomes a question for the state constitution. See, the state Supreme Court wasn't organized under the Constitution of the United States. It was organized under the Constitution of Ohio. And that is where you have to look to see what is the recourse to the opinions of a court. Could it be that, as he says, the court found that property taxes are an unconstitutional way of funding public schools. Therefore, the fact that Ohio is still doing it, could you actually charge the legislators? I'm not an expert on the Ohio Constitution. It might be an interesting look into to consider what are the possibilities of the options. But ultimately, the question really should be, if your legislators are violating the Constitution of Ohio, and you've got proof of that from the Supreme Court, shouldn't you hire better legislatures in Ohio? I mean, we all heard the joke, how can you tell when a politician is lying? Their lips are moving. See, the legislature of Ohio are hired by the people of Ohio to represent the people of Ohio, to exercise their power in their name. Don't you hold some responsibility for the legislators? In other words, rather than trying to get the courts to apply it, how about you work to find better legislators? I know we'd like an easy solution, like, oh, let the courts do it. But if the courts had the power to do that, then we would be ruled by courts rather than actually be a republic. I also want to remind you of Article 1, Section 2 of the Ohio Constitution, which reads, all political power is inherent in the people. Government is instituted for their equal protection and benefit, and they have the right to alter, reform, or abolish the same whenever they may deem it necessary. So ultimately, the responsibility for this rests in the people of the United States, or in this case, the people of Ohio. If that's the case, if the people of Ohio agree with the court, because it's possible the state Supreme Court got it wrong as well. I'm not familiar with the case. That's why I said it would require a deeper dive to even begin to put a specific response as to how to go about it. But if the point is, if the people of Ohio believe property taxes are a violation of the Constitution. Is it? Look at the Constitution of Ohio and see if that's actually true. Just because the Supreme Court says so doesn't mean it's true. Then your answer is to exercise your power, the power that's inherent in you and in your fellow citizens, help convince them of the criminality of those in the legislature, and then help to find people that are willing to fulfill their oath to support the constitutions of Ohio and of the United States. So, Eric, I hope that answered your question as well. Probably not the answer you were looking for, maybe not the answer you were hoping for, but the answer that I believe the laws and the constitutions of our states and of the United States require. We have to take responsibility for our decisions in the ballot box. And that sometimes may mean we don't get the answer we want until we make some serious changes. But I love those questions. I like both of those questions, in part because it shows people that are thinking. This is how it works. What can we do? And I know most people I talk to are looking for a grand answer, and there rarely is that the right answer. It basically generally replaces one tyranny with another tyranny. But at least we're thinking. I've resurrected, I put this catchphrase, this subtitle on my book, Restoring the Constitution, Returning the Constitution to We the People. It's important that we understand it so that we can use it to hold all of our government officials accountable. And if you have questions about it, go to constitutionstudy.com, click the Ask a Question button, fill out the form. There's a little checkbox that says answer it on America Out Loud Talk Radio. If you do, I will do my best to answer it right here so others can learn it as well. But I'd love you to ask those questions. I love answering the questions. It also opens me up to other ideas that maybe I need to spend a little time, maybe with Eric and others in Ohio, better understanding what's going on with their constitution and their state legislatures. Now, if you want to join us for more, well, the Constitution Study meets every weekday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time on America Out Loud Talk Radio, heard on the iHeartRadio Network. If you can't listen then, all the episodes go to podcast generally a day or two after they're heard on the radio. Listen to your favorite podcast app, but subscribe to the show. Leave me a rating and review, especially on Apple Podcasts. That's how other people find the Constitution Study. You can find all the links you need at AmericaOutloud.news. But as always, share them. It's by sharing this information, it's by sharing those links that we work together to share the blessings of liberty.